All right, everyone, let's dive into a case that really shows just how crazy construction disputes can get.
Oh, yeah.
This one went all the way to the Sixth Circuit, and
wow.
It's called Alassa per Industria del Marmo v. Alexander.
Mm.
We're talking marble. We're talking Memphis City Hall.
Sounds like fun.
And a whole lot of finger pointing.
Yeah.
So what's really interesting for everyone listening is how courts handle all these multiple parties and claims.
Right.
Because it can get really complicated, especially in construction. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you get everyone involved from the suppliers to the architects to even, you know, sometimes city officials.
Yeah.
So
it's a pretty common scenario, actually.
It is. It's a classic setup. You've got your LSA, which in this case is an Italian company supplying the marble.
Yeah.
You've got Alexander. They're the subcontractor hired to install it.
Right.
And then you've got Southern Builders, the prime contractor for the whole shebang, the whole city hall project.
Yeah.
You throw in the surety company backing up Southern Builders, and you can't forget the architect.
Right.
And yeah, it's a you're just asking for a legal showdown at that point.
So set the scene for us. How did this whole thing go down?
Okay, so it started with Elizan, that Italian company. They sued Alexander, the subcontractor, for marble that they said Alexander didn't pay for.
Makes sense.
We're talking a lot of money, like $127,000.
Wow.
But Alexander, they didn't just take this lying down.
Oh.
They countersued.
Okay.
Saying, hey, the marble was messed up. It was defective.
Right.
And it was late.
Yeah.
And they actually asked for even more money back, like $350,000.
Ooh, that's a bold move.
It is. It is a bold move.
But it sounds like that was an awesome.
No. You're catching on.
Okay.
Alexander decided, you know what? While we're at it, let's just file claims against everybody.
Okay.
Southern Builders, their surety company, Continental Casualty, even the city of Memphis itself. For all this unpaid work and damages they claimed they were owed.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, as if that's not enough, they also threw in a third-party complaint against, guess who?
The architect.
The architect.
For doing a bad job, yeah.
For negligent supervision.
Wow. They really brought everybody into this.
They did. Everyone was invited to this party.
It makes sense in a way.
Right? Sort of.
I mean, I guess they were thinking, let's just resolve everything at once instead of a million different lawsuits.
Right. That's the thinking.
But that had to make things even more complicated, right? I mean, for the court?
Oh, yeah. The district court was not happy.
Really?
Yeah. They basically said, whoa, this is way too much.
Okay.
We're not dealing with all of this. Hmm. They dismissed all those extra claims Alexander threw in.
So, round one to the court for keeping things simple.
Yeah, you could say that. They said it wasn't directly part of the same transaction as the original lawsuit from Alassa about the unpaid marble.
Okay, but I'm guessing Alexander didn't just give up there, did they?
Oh, no, they did not.
Okay.
They appealed.
Right.
And that is where the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals stepped in and said, hold on, we got to look at this a little differently.
Okay, so what did they do?
They brought in this concept called ancillary jurisdiction.
Okay, ancillary jurisdiction. Break that down for us. What does that even mean?
All right, think of it this way. You go to the grocery store, right?
Uh-huh.
And you just need milk. That's all you went for. But then you see the cookies.
Oh, yeah.
And you end up buying those too, because why not?
Right.
Ancillary jurisdiction's kind of like that.
Right.
It basically lets federal courts hear claims that are related to the main lawsuit.
Okay.
Even if those claims wouldn't normally fall under their jurisdiction.
So they're kind of tacking it on.
Exactly. They're like, well, we're already here dealing with this marble thing.
Right.
Let's just handle all this other stuff related to the city hall project while we're at it.
To avoid a bigger mess later?
Exactly. Streamline the process.
Okay. So they wanted to keep everything under one roof. Keep it simple. But how did they justify that legally? Did they just make an exception?
Well, they used something called the logical relationship test.
Okay, the logical relationship test, what is that?
Basically, it asks, do all these claims come from the same core set of facts?
Mm.
And in this case, it was pretty clear it all traced back to the marble.
Right.
The purchase, the delivery, the installation, you name it.
All the problems.
All the problems stemmed from that marble.
Mm.
And even though the legal claims had different names, like you've got breach of contract, negligence, all sorts of things, the underlying facts, they were all connected.
So even if the claims had different legal names, it was all part of the same story, the same set of events.
Exactly. Same story, different chapters.
Interesting. So did the Sixth Circuit agree? Did they say, okay, all these claims should be bundled together?
They did.
They did.
They overturned the district court's decision and said, nope, we're going to hear all of this together.
Wow. So a win for efficiency.
A win for efficiency. They thought that was the most, you know, the fairest, most efficient way to deal with this whole tangled web.
Okay, but I got to ask, were there any dissenting voices? Did anyone disagree?
Actually, yeah. There was one judge who was not on board with this.
Really?
Judge McAllister. He actually argued that contract disputes and tort claims, like that negligence claim against the architect, he said those are just way too different to be lumped together.
Hmm. I mean, I guess you could see his point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to sort through all those different types of claims at once could get pretty messy.
Oh, absolutely. And Judge McAllister felt really strongly that keeping those legal categories separate, you know, neat and tidy,
yeah,
that was really important, even if it meant things might get a little more complicated procedure-wise.
Right.
He was worried that trying to handle everything at once could lead to, you know, some confusion.
Right.
And potentially be unfair to some of the parties involved.
So he was really focused on making sure each claim got the right kind of attention, the specific attention it deserved.
Exactly. You don't want to just lump everything together and hope for the best.
Right. But the majority still decided to go with the keep it all together approach.
They did. They acknowledged Judge McAllister's concerns, but ultimately they just felt that the benefits of a single trial, those outweighed the drawbacks.
Okay, I see. So what were those benefits? What were they thinking?
Well, think about it, right? If you have separate trials,
mm-hmm,
you could end up with totally different rulings.
Oh, right.
Like one court saying one thing and another court saying something completely different.
Yeah.
All based on the same basic set of facts.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like they were trying to prevent a situation where somebody could win in one case and lose in another, even though it's all the same situation.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't want anyone getting conflicting information or judgments.
Makes sense.
Yeah. The majority really emphasized that all these claims came from the same project. The same marble, the same set of problems. They saw it as one big story.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that trying to separate everything out, it would just make things more complicated and drawn out for everyone.
Yeah, well, it's never good.
No. They even compared it to untangling a huge knot of yarn. You know, it's just messy, maybe even impossible.
Okay, so I'm starting to see both sides here.
Yeah.
The majority was focused on efficiency, avoiding those conflicting decisions.
Right.
And then you have the dissenting judge who really wanted to make sure things were neat and tidy from a legal perspective.
Exactly. Making sure everything was organized and categorized properly.
But why does all this legal back and forth matter to our listeners?
That's a great question. This is why it matters. If you're ever involved in one of these multi-party disputes,
mm-hmm,
especially in construction, understanding this idea of ancillary jurisdiction,
okay,
and this logical relationship test, it can be super important.
Hmm.
If you can show that the different claims are all connected by, you know, like a common set of facts.
Like with this marble.
Like with the marble.
Yeah.
Then you have a really strong argument for keeping those claims together in one court.
Cool.
So it's not just about proving like direct cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's about showing how all the threads are connected, like different chapters in the same book.
Yeah. And this could help to, you know, streamline the whole process, avoid those conflicting rulings we were talking about.
Exactly. Less hassle, less confusion, more efficiency. That's the goal.
So it sounds like this logical relationship test, that's really important. But is it always clear cut? I mean, there's still room for interpretation, right?
Oh, absolutely. The Eliasa case, it gives us some good insight,
mm-hmm,
and sets a precedent. But, you know, each case is different.
Mm.
It has its own twists and turns.
Of course.
And, you know, which circuit court you're in can also make a difference.
Right. The American legal system, always keeping us on our toes.
Always. So what can we tell our listeners? What should they keep in mind if they find themselves in this kind of situation?
Well, I think the main thing is to be strategic and think about this early on.
Okay.
Like, if you think there might be cross claims or you want to bring in other parties, don't wait.
Mm-hmm.
File those claims early and explain really clearly how they relate back to the original issue. Don't assume the court will automatically connect the dots.
Right. So be proactive, build a strong case from the beginning.
Exactly. You got to lay the groundwork, show how all the pieces fit together.
So don't be shy about pointing out the connections.
Nope. Be loud and proud about those connections.
All right. So you've got to be proactive. You got to build that strong case. But what else?
Well, be prepared to explain why resolving everything together makes sense, not just for you, but for everyone involved.
Okay.
It's about efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fairness.
Yeah.
It's about avoiding those contradictory rulings.
Right.
And the Eliasa case is a great example of how making those arguments, they can really work.
It shows you how those arguments can actually win the day.
So this really highlights why having a good lawyer is so important.
Oh, absolutely. Someone who understands all these little nuances and knows how to navigate the system.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's not just lawyers who need to be paying attention. Anyone involved in a construction project, architects, engineers, contractors, suppliers, even city officials, they should all be aware of this concept. It can make a big difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Between a smooth process and years of expensive, drawn-out litigation.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
No one wants that. Let's talk about a real-world situation.
Okay.
Imagine you've got a subcontractor,
mm-hmm.
and they're suing a supplier for faulty materials.
Okay.
But then they find out, oh, wait a minute, a city inspector might have contributed to this problem.
Mm.
Maybe by being negligent or by delaying approvals.
Okay.
Could they use the Eleza case to argue for bringing the city inspector into the lawsuit?
That's a great question. What do you think?
Well, like most things in law, it depends. The key here is showing how the inspector's actions are directly tied to those faulty materials.
Okay.
For example, if the subcontractor can prove that the inspector's negligence actually made the problems worse, or that those delayed approvals caused more delays and damages down the line,
right,
then they might have a good argument for bringing that inspector into the case.
Using the logical relationship test.
Exactly. You've got to connect those dots, show how the inspector's actions are part of the same story as the supplier's alleged breach.
It's all about painting that picture of how everything is connected.
You got it. And that's what's so valuable about the LSI case.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a framework for understanding ancillary jurisdiction.
Okay.
It goes beyond just those rigid legal categories.
Right.
And it really focuses on finding those fair and efficient solutions to these really complex disputes, real-world solutions for real-world problems.
This has been a really great deep dive.
It has.
We've unpacked a pretty complicated legal concept, looked at a real case, even looked at a what-if scenario.
We tried to cover all the bases.
Hopefully our listener feels a little more confident navigating this area of the law now.
I hope so, too.
So what would you say is the key takeaway?
Be aware of the logical relationship test and know how it can be used in multi-party disputes.
Okay.
Remember, showing that common factual core that can be your key to a smoother, more efficient legal process. Who doesn't want that?
Exactly. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to check out our show notes for links to the case and other helpful resources.
Yeah, there's a lot more information out there.
And as always, we love to hear from you.
We do.
So if you have any questions about the case,
or any other burning legal questions,
or even your own hypothetical scenarios,
oh, we love those.
Let us know. Until next time, stay curious.
Keep exploring.
And keep learning.
Absolutely.
Bye, everyone.
See ya. Yeah, they did. The Sixth Circuit decided that it made more sense to just hear all this together all at once. Mm. You know, they thought that resolving everything all in one go was the most efficient and fair way to untangle this mess.
So efficiency wins the day. But hold on. Was everyone on board with this? Were there any dissenting opinions?
Yeah. Actually, there was one judge who disagreed with the majority.
Oh, really?
Judge McAllister. He actually argued that contract disputes and tort claims, like that negligence claim against the architect, remember? He said those are just too different. You can't lump them together.
Yeah, I could see his point. I mean, trying to sort through all of those different types of claims at the same time, that's got to be tough, right?
It is. It gets really complicated. And Judge McAllister really believed in keeping those legal categories separate.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and tidy, even if it meant that things might get a little more complicated from a procedural standpoint.
Right.
He worried that trying to handle everything at once could lead to confusion and potentially be unfair to some of the parties.
So he was coming at it from the angle of making sure each claim got the specific attention it deserved. But the majority still went with the keep it all together approach.
They did. They understood Judge McAllister's concerns. But in the end, they just felt like the benefits of a single trial outweighed any potential drawbacks.
Okay. So what were those benefits? What was their logic?
Well, think about it this way. If you have separate trials for all these claims,
right,
you could end up with contradictory rulings.
Oh, right.
Like one court says one thing and another court says something completely different.
Oh, wow.
Even though they're both looking at the same basic facts.
Yeah. So basically, they were trying to avoid a situation where someone could win one lawsuit and lose another one, even though it's all stemming from the same incident.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't want to create a system where the outcome depended on which courtroom you happened to be in.
Makes sense.
And the majority really emphasized that all these claims, they all stemmed from the same project. Mm-hmm. Same marble, same set of problems. It was all connected.
One big interconnected story.
Right. They felt that trying to separate everything out would just make things way more complicated and time-consuming for everyone.
And more expensive, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. Mm. Nobody wants to drag things out longer than they have to, especially when it comes to legal fees.
Right. So they even used that analogy about untangling a huge knot of yarn, remember?
They said it's messy, it's difficult, and sometimes it's downright impossible.
Okay, so we've got the majority emphasizing efficiency and trying to avoid conflicting decisions.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the dissenting judge who's really focused on keeping things neat and tidy from a legal perspective.
Right, making sure each legal category gets its due attention.
So it's a balancing act in a way. But why should our listeners care about all this legal back and forth?
That's a great question. And this is why it matters. If you're ever involved in a multi-party dispute,
okay,
especially in the construction world, understanding this whole concept of ancillary jurisdiction
mm-hmm.
and the logical relationship test, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
If you can show that all those different claims are connected by some common core facts.
Like with the marble in this case.
Exactly. Like with the marble, you've got a strong argument for keeping all those claims together in one court.
I see.
So it's not just about proving a direct cause and effect relationship.
Right.
It's about showing that all those threads of the story, they're all woven together.
Like chapters in a book.
Exactly. Different chapters in the same book. And that can help to streamline the process, avoid conflicting rulings, and ultimately save everyone a lot of time and money.
Okay. So even though the logical relationship test seems pretty straightforward.
Uh-huh.
I'm guessing there's still room for debate and interpretation, right? It's not a slam dunk every time.
You're right. It's not a magic formula. The Elbaya case gives us a good starting point. It sets a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
But each case is different.
Right.
With its own unique circumstances. And of course, which circuit court you're in. That can also affect how these principles are applied.
Right. So there are a lot of factors to consider.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so interesting, right? It's not just black and white. There's a lot of nuance and strategy involved.
That's the American legal system for you. Always keeping us on our toes.
It certainly does. So what are some practical takeaways for our listeners? What should they keep in mind if they find themselves in a similar situation?
Great question.
I think one of the biggest lessons here is to be proactive and strategic right from the start.
Okay.
If you think there might be potential cross claims or you want to bring in additional parties, don't wait.
Mm-hmm.
File those claims as soon as possible and make sure you explain very clearly how they relate back to that initial issue. Don't just assume the court will see the connections on their own.
So be proactive and lay that strong factual foundation.
Exactly. You got to show the court how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together.
Don't be shy about highlighting those connections.
Exactly. Be bold. Be upfront.
Yeah.
And make your case.
All right. So you've got to be proactive. You've got to build that strong case.
What else? Well, you've got to be prepared to make a compelling argument for why resolving everything together makes sense.
Okay.
Not just for you, but for everyone involved.
Right.
It's about efficiency. It's about fairness. And it's about avoiding those contradictory rulings that we talked about.
So it's not just about what's best for your side. It's about presenting a solution that benefits the whole system.
Exactly. No. You want to show the court that you're not just looking out for yourself. You're trying to find the most efficient and fair solution for everyone.
I see. And the LSA case provides a good example of how to do that effectively.
It does. It shows that those arguments can actually persuade the court and lead to a more streamlined legal process.
So this really highlights why having a skilled lawyer on your side is so important.
Absolutely. Someone who understands these nuances and knows how to navigate the procedural complexities.
Yeah, definitely. But it's not just lawyers who should be paying attention.
Right.
Anyone involved in a construction project, whether they're in the legal department or out on the job site, they should be aware of these concepts.
Absolutely. It can make a huge difference in the outcome of a dispute.
Okay. Let's put this into a real-world scenario.
Mm.
Imagine you've got a subcontractor who's suing a supplier for faulty materials.
Okay.
But then they discover that a city inspector might have also contributed to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe through negligence or by delaying approvals.
Right.
Could they use the LSA case to argue for bringing that city inspector into the lawsuit?
That's a really interesting question. And you know the answer is probably.
It depends.
It depends. You got it.
Of course.
The key here is to show that the inspector's actions were directly connected to those faulty materials.
Right.
For example, if the subcontractor can prove that the inspector's negligence made the problems caused by those materials even worse, or that their delayed approvals caused more delays and more damages down the line, then they might have a good argument for bringing that inspector into the case under the logical relationship test.
So it's all about painting that picture of interconnectedness, showing how the inspector's actions are woven into the same story as the supplier's alleged breach.
Exactly. You've got to connect the dots. And the Elisak case provides a really useful framework for understanding how to do that.
So the Elisak case, it's not just about this one specific legal concept. It's about a broader approach to handling these complex multi-party disputes.
Right. It's about moving away from those rigid legal categories and focusing more on the practical realities of finding fair and efficient solutions.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive. We've unpacked this really complex legal concept, explored a real-world case, and even looked at a hypothetical scenario.
We did our best to cover all the angles.
And hopefully our listeners are feeling a little more equipped to navigate this area of the law.
I hope so, too. It's a fascinating area.
It is. And it just goes to show you that the law is constantly evolving, always adapting to new challenges.
Absolutely. It's a living, breathing thing.
So what would you say is the most important takeaway for our listeners today?
I think the key takeaway is to be aware of the logical relationship test and how it can be used strategically in multi-party disputes.
Mm-hmm.
Remember demonstrating that common factual core that can be your ticket to a more streamlined and efficient legal process.
Less headache, less hassle, more efficiency. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want that?
Exactly.
It sounds like this logical relationship test can be a powerful tool, but it's not like a guaranteed win every time.
Right, exactly. You can't just throw a bunch of claims out there and hope they stick.
Right.
You have to really be careful and show how each claim connects to the original lawsuit, like with those facts we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, putting a puzzle together. Each piece has to fit.
Right, right. Okay, I'm starting to see how this all works, but I'm curious, does the LSI case, does it tell us anything else besides just this logical relationship test?
Yeah, definitely. Like, one thing that really stands out is timing.
Okay.
Remember how Alexander brought in those additional claims right away?
Mm-hmm.
That was really smart. It showed they were serious about wanting to resolve everything together, and it gave the court all the information up front.
So don't wait until the last minute to bring in those extra parties or claims.
Exactly. Get ahead of the game. Be proactive.
Got it. Okay, so timing is important. What else?
Well, think about how Alexander presented their arguments.
Okay.
They didn't just focus on what was good for them.
Mm-hmm.
They highlighted how a combined trial would be better for everyone involved. The court, the other parties, everyone.
So it's not just about what helps you. It's about what's best for the whole system.
Right. And it shows that understanding these legal ideas, it's not just for lawyers.
Yeah.
Anyone involved in a construction project, they should know about this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. It can make a big difference.
Huge difference. Okay, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a subcontractor.
Okay.
Suing a supplier for, let's say, faulty materials.
Okay, yeah.
But then, later on, they realize, oh, wait a minute. A city inspector might have messed things up, too. Maybe they were negligent or they held up approvals.
Right.
Could they use the LASA case to bring that inspector into the lawsuit?
That's a good question. So could they?
Well, it depends.
Okay, of course it depends.
The key would be to show that what the inspector did was directly related to those bad materials.
Oh.
Like, could the subcontractor prove the inspector made things worse?
Right.
Or that their delays caused even more problems and costs down the line?
Hmm.
If they could, then they might have a good argument to bring the inspector in.
Using that logical relationship test we talked about.
Exactly. It's all about connecting the dots, showing how the inspector's actions are part of the same story as the supplier's issues.
It's like weaving it all together.
Yes. And that's what's so great about LASA.
Yeah.
It gives us this framework for understanding jurisdiction that's really practical. It focuses on finding solutions that are fair and efficient.
This has been a really fantastic deep dive. We've broken down a complicated legal idea, looked at a real-world example, and even considered a hypothetical scenario.
We did all.
Hopefully our listeners feel a little more prepared to deal with this kind of situation now.
I hope so.
So what's the big takeaway here?
The big takeaway is to remember that logical relationship test and how it can be used strategically when you have multiple parties involved in a dispute.
Right.
Remember, showing that common core of facts, that's how you can make the legal process more efficient.
Less stress, less hassle, more efficiency. That's what we all want.
Absolutely.
Well, folks, that's it for today's deep dive. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to the LSA case and other helpful resources.
Yeah, there's a lot more information out there if you want to learn more.
And as always, we'd love to hear from you.
We do. Let us know what you think.
So any burning questions about this case?
Any other legal questions you're wrestling with?
Maybe you have your own hypothetical scenario you'd like us to consider.
Oh, we love those. So send them our way.
Until next time, stay curious, keep exploring, and keep learning.
Bye, everyone.